You've heard the headlines. Get some perspective now with Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Good morning and a happy Tuesday to you. That means it's a primary Tuesday and all eyes towards New Hampshire.
The lead.
Yeah, primary day in New Hampshire. We've got some new polling numbers out right now. And the latest poll is showing that heading into this primary, Senator Bernie Sanders has a pretty distinct advantage. I'll be one somewhat threatened by Mayor Pete and Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, who is also surging. What happens tonight could have a strong impact on who the nominee for the Democratic Party eventually becomes.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see kind of how it shakes out. Although, if you look at some of the polling data, that it appears that Senator Bernie Sanders, who is the senator from, I'm led to believe, Vermont's very close to New Hampshire.
Yeah.
In the neighborhood.
Let's call it that.
And so they know him up there, and that always tends to play a bit of a role. You know that you feel like
proximity.
You're voting for your neighbor type thing, and so
how neighborly of them.
Yeah, I get that on some level, but it would be so nice. It would be so nice if this race wasn't shaping up to. If Bernie Sanders continues to do well, and he's doing well by all the metrics that we have, right? Is that fair to say? That we weren't having to vote between pick between a socialist and a nativist, because it appears that we're heading towards, again, this election of extremes.
I don't buy it. I honestly don't buy it. It's New Hampshire. We've had one caucus, and this is the first primary. There is a lot of race to still be ran. And I get that that's who's leading right now. But New Hampshire is one thing. Again, Iowa and New Hampshire, they're not indicative as to how the rest of the country
is going to go. They're not very representative.
No, not at all.
America.
I think the one number tonight that people should be watching more so than what percentage of the vote Bernie Sanders gets.
Okay.
Who comes in second? Who comes in third?
Okay.
All of which is important. Voter turnout. Voter turnout is going to be a huge indication as to how this race is going to go. If you look at Iowa, Iowa had lower voter turnout in 2020 than they did in 2016.
Okay.
Iowa. Now,
what do you read into that?
I read into it that the Democratic base isn't as fired up as they should be. The Democratic base isn't going to be coming out. Let me tell you, last night in New Hampshire, where you had the president who held where the president held a rally, you had people waiting in the rain, in the cold, to listen to him outside. They were lined up for hours. That is a base who is going to show up and who is going to vote. If the Democratic Party does not have that same measure of enthusiasm, if you don't see as many people turn out in New Hampshire today as you had in 2016, or set new records, then I think the Democratic Party is in for a wake-up call.
I don't think you are, and I would turn it around this way. It strikes me, and I've heard some of the D's talking this way, it doesn't matter who the D nominee is. Their argument is, get through this process. We're voting for anybody whose name isn't Trump. And so the weeding out process they're going through now with still, is it technically 11 people who are still running in some way,
depends
shape, or form?
Depends on the state.
But you know what I'm saying? Not all are on the ballot, Bloomberg, et cetera. That it almost doesn't matter to many of them.
Any of the
seven dwarfs are good enough.
You say that. The idea of just, you know, nominating somebody who's normal isn't a foregone conclusion in beating Trump.
But that's my argument, where you're setting it up right now for nativist versus socialist. And I think that's a horrible decision a lot of people have to make.
Well, I think that what you're going to get potentially, I mean, right now you've got Bernie Sanders, who, you know, socialist, that's who you're referring to there. I don't know. Is he going to win the primary? Or is he going to win the Democratic nominee? I honestly don't think so right now. I don't. I see that he's leading in New Hampshire. Again, a lot of race to be ran. Where you're going to start to see in these next couple of races is you've got the centrists, the moderates, if you will, the Buttigieg, Biden, Klobuchar, Bloomberg. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Which one of them starts to pull ahead? Which one?
Or do they continue to cannibalize each other?
And if they do continue to cannibalize themselves, what we're looking at right now is if you have this huge field, because what New Hampshire typically does is start to narrow the field, okay? You start to have some of these candidates that peel off and say, you know what, we can't continue. Will Elizabeth Warren be one of those? She hasn't been doing too well lately. But maybe not.
I find there almost no difference, my perception is, almost no difference between her and Bernie.
I'm with you on that.
Like they're
Bernie has the momentum.
Oh, agreed. Yeah. That Bernie has separated himself from Elizabeth Warren.
Right.
And if they're both preaching the same message, he's winning that argument.
That's what has to happen with the Biden, Klobuchar, Buttigieg, and Bloomberg.
Wow. Like,
there has to be one that...
Three B's and a K.
I know. I just, off the top
Did
of my
I get
head,
that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I'm not right.
But what there's potential of... is if you still have this huge field because it doesn't narrow after today or Nevada or after South Carolina, and you still have this huge group of candidates going into Super Tuesday, you're then dividing a bunch of delegates. You need 1,900 delegates to be the party nominee.
Right.
So people, you know, complaining and bickering over who won Iowa, Bernie or Buttigieg, the difference between the two is two delegates. That is nothing when it comes to 1,900. So you could get to a point where the Democratic National Convention, nobody has the 1,900, and are you going into a brokered convention?
So the scenarios that you were just describing sound a heck of a lot like 4 years ago on the R side, where you had Trump as the outlier, who was in a world unto himself, and you had, quote, moderates, whether they be Jeb Bush,
Marco Rubio.
You remember the ones in the middle all fighting amongst each other while the outlier managed to win. Are you seeing something similar in the D party that if all of the, quote, moderates, whatever you want to refer to them as, centrists, cannibalize one another while Bernie stands off to himself with the Bernie bros or whatnot and just continues to rack up wins? It sounds pretty similar. Because I've made the argument that Bernie Sanders is to the Democratic Party what Trump was to the Republican Party.
Yeah, but Bernie also ran last time and didn't win.
He
didn't have Donald Trump lose a nomination.
But Bernie fans think it was stolen from him. Bernie fans think that it was all a hoax.
Let's say, because we're doing like hypothetical here, pick somebody in that moderate group, okay? Who do you want?
Buttigieg?
Okay, let's go with Buttigieg.
Okay.
Let's hypothetically say, and I think this is a long shot, but that Buttigieg becomes the Democratic nominee.
Okay.
Okay? Do you think the Bernie bros or whatever it is that you just wrote, do they coalesce around Buttigieg?
Not in the same way that supporters of the other candidates were, just like Trump supporters wouldn't have gotten behind Jeb Bush.
But along those lines, when you say it's just about who can beat Trump or Democratic Party kind of getting around whoever can beat Trump, well, if Bernie's people don't get behind candidate
Oh, no, they painted themselves into a corner. Because by letting Bernie into the party, just like when Republicans let Trump into the party, they've completely screwed themselves. Because you can make the argument, and David Brooks of the New York Times made this argument, I thought he made it very well, that the Democrats are screwed if Bernie Sanders is their nominee.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're also screwed if he isn't.
Okay, but wait. Which one hurts them more?
And that's maybe a calculation they're going through. Because would Bernie Bros get behind Amy Klobuchar? Probably not. Any of the others, they aren't radical enough. They aren't democratic socialist enough. Just like Trump supporters weren't going to vote for establishment Republican candidates, period. Weren't going to do it.
So they just hang out, not vote, and then allow the other party to win? I don't buy it. Hmm. I think one of the great unifiers right now is anyone who's not Trump. I think that's what's happening within the Democratic Party right now. President Trump is this amazing unifier for the Democratic Party. And their whole idea is anybody but Trump. That is what this party is trying to do.
If the Bernie bros, again, I like saying it. If they think that Bernie gets screwed out of the nomination by the establishment Democrats and the Democratic National Committee, do they show up and vote for the D?
Oh, yeah, they do. Okay,
you think they do?
Yeah, I think they do. Because well, I heard R. My mind was someplace else.
Yeah.
No, I think they do.
Well, let's see what happens tonight. As, again, if you believe some of the polling data, Bernie and Buttigieg. Good night. Could we have broken up the names?
Bloomberg and Biden.
Bernie and Buttigieg are expected to do well tonight because they did well in Iowa. Let's be honest. That's one of the reasons behind it. Maybe the better question is not who's going to win tonight, but who's going to lose to the point that they can't move on.
I think you got to be careful with Warren. Elizabeth Warren and Biden is trying to
hanging on by a thread.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, he's trying to make it to South Carolina. That's for sure.
So the new Loop 202. Have you driven it yet? The truck bypass. I went and did it just to see what it was.
I know I had a reason.
It's like
for
a
it.
High speed. It's
nice.
It is nice.
It's pretty. I like it.
So why this freeway that opened up what late December? Why
yeah, about that? Yeah.
Does it already need repairs?
St. James and Pamela Hughes.
I'm going to have to play the remake version of this. Come on. Life is a highway. And for a lot of people, the new Loop 202 was supposed to be a bit of a godsend. I tried to ask friends of mine. I did it on the Facebook. Are you using the new 202? Or are you seeing less traffic on the I-10 through downtown Phoenix because there's this new freeway open and it appears the jury's still out?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen less traffic.
Okay.
I used it once. Riley had a
the new 202.
Yeah, she had a soccer tournament out at like the Fear Farm in the West Valley, which is really close to the stadium and, you know, hockey and all that kind of stuff out there.
And this new section, it goes from I-10 in Chandler, kind of down by Wild Horse Pass or whatever they call it.
Yeah, the 202 Santan.
And then it curves all the way behind South Mountain and meets back up with I-10 at about 59th Ave.
And you know what? I loved it. I enjoyed it. It was an easy ride. I honestly did. It was super weird because it was a Saturday. I think it was a Saturday morning.
It's just nice meandering freeway.
It's pretty. I mean, like the view. I like the view.
Well,
and the other
thing, too. It's all desert and mountains.
The other aspect about it is like when you're driving through the city, it could be a bit aggravating, right? People cutting out,
okay.
a lot of traffic. There's so much more. This was a nice leisurely drive. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Because there weren't a ton of cars on it, right?
No, there wasn't a ton of cars. Okay. So when I saw this report from AZ Family yesterday, I was a bit surprised. I mean, I took it a couple weeks ago. I didn't notice this, but there seems to be a problem with the new Loop 202. Take a listen.
At almost every overpass, drivers will see this, patches of asphalt deteriorating. We saw it on both sides of Loop 202 for about six consecutive miles, from Dobbins Road to I-10 in the West Valley. Some drivers can't believe it.
It's totally ridiculous. It's a brand new road. So to have that kind of destruction on already, it's like, what is it going to look like down the road?
Think about it. Like the pavement is kind of
like peeling up. Right?
Right.
And it goes from where there's transitions. When you go from concrete to asphalt, I guess. Apparently, it's not unusual to have a little bit of a rough area where that transition is. But the question is,
it's been open 2 months.
Should it be falling apart already?
Tom Herman with ADOT talked to AZ Family.
We're well aware of that. We're looking at it now to come up with the right solution to make those repairs. This shouldn't be happening after 2 months. There's any number of reasons. You don't want to really speculate. We want the engineers to come out here and take a look. Let them evaluate exactly what happened and exactly what we need to do to fix it and make sure it doesn't happen again. We apologize for that. We want to provide a freeway that will serve them well for decades into the future.
Okay, so you've served us well for 2 months. Here's my frustration.
Can I make sure that we... The taxpayers don't pay a nickel for these repairs?
This whole project, this was a huge project, $1.7 billion project. Mm-hmm. That finished 3 years early.
3 years?
3 years early. Which, just the context clues of this all has me asking the question, was it rushed? Did they do it too quickly? Did they not cross the T's, dot the I's? And so now we're in a position where this $1.7 billion project, 2 months after it opened, has parts of the freeway peeled. peeling up, damage in both directions.
Were they bonused on finishing early? Was there a financial incentive to get it done quickly?
You know what? That's a great question. Were the contractors who were put out on this project, did they get a financial incentive for finishing it early?
And if was it so, done shoddily?
That's the thing. That's what I'm wondering.
I think there's an argument. I think there's a heck of an argument behind that because, you know, this is it's the old joke. I remember when my dad worked for the Pentagon and he used to fly on military aircraft. And he said he had one pilot who used to remind him all the time, goes, buckle in, remember, you're flying on low bid airlines. You know, that this was a low bid. Whoever was the low bidder got the job. Then they finished it early. And 2 months into it, the asphalt is peeling up. But also, can we point out? On a road that is hardly bumper-to-bumper traffic.
Right.
I mean, it's not... The rest of the Valley freeways probably are still having a heck of a lot more volume than this brand-new Loop 202. It should be the last one that's peeling up.
And then the other thing you got to take into consideration, for folks that are listening that grew up on the East Coast like I did, you have some of those extreme weather changes, especially over the winter, where you have the rain or the snow, mm-hmm. and the water freezes, and it contracts, and then it expands. And
that
leads to,
like, potholes.
And that's
where
you get these
pothole
issues. Yeah, potholes that'll swallow a car, for goodness sakes. We don't have that kind of weather here. I mean, we have extremely hot weather, where you're like, asphalt could be peeling up, but it's been freaking January.
It gets wavy.
Yeah, and it's so, did they rush it through?
Hmm.
That's the question I have right now, because there is no way you spend $1.7
billion
on a project, finish it 3 years early, and 2 months later have these kinds of issues.
Pamela has spoken. There is no way. We just got a tweet, just saying. Tweets at Just Saying. I'm on the new 202 now, from Surprise to Ahwatukee. Worried that they use subpar. Did they use subpar stuff? Again, low bid. Remember that. It's all done low bid. So, we're going to tell you about an unexpected victim of the coronavirus. No, it's not some grandfather in Wuhan, China. Who's paying the price here for the coronavirus? It's coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
Arizona's News Station. KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
One of the concerns that people have about the coronavirus is a legitimate one. There are some concerns I think are redonkulous. But the idea that maybe China isn't being totally forthcoming, isn't being completely transparent, is certainly borne out by, the history of China, okay? And so we may not know everything we need to know or should know about the coronavirus because China's playing it close to the vest for fear of losing face or whatnot, okay? So that is the... And I think, Pamela, you'd agree, that is a legitimate concern.
Sure.
What's not a legitimate concern is Chinese restaurants suffering because people think they're going to get the coronavirus having soup.
Walks are cold, tables empty, Chinatown deserted.
It's empty.
Helen Ng is the owner of Amazing 66 restaurant on Mott Street. She says business has dropped about 50%.
What? People are very concerned. We understand their feelings, but actually it's hurting us too.
Blame it on coronavirus. Even though there are no confirmed cases in New York, just the fear of it seems to be keeping residents at home. For Helen, the pinch is especially hard because she refuses to let her staff be punished by the fear. She still pays them, even if no one is ordering any food.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to me, the idea of avoiding, I would venture to say, you know, Phoenix doesn't have like a Chinatown like
no.
San Francisco or New York City does.
Right.
I would venture to say that there is a lot of fear out there because there's a lot of ignorance and that folks are avoiding that entire area altogether. if you look at the economics of it, I would assume that it's not just Chinese restaurants in Chinatown and Manhattan that are having this economic impact. I would venture to say it's probably the hotels in the area, the businesses in the area. So many people who we've heard, you know, the only way you're going to get it is, one, if you've been to Wuhan, China.
First off.
Or if you are exposed to somebody who has been there.
Correctamundo.
And so people are avoiding these areas for fear that people may have been to that area and they may be transmitting the disease.
But if you're afraid to go to the Panda Express...
Oh, okay? That's a little different.
And order the egg rolls because you think they contain coronavirus. You've gone completely off the deep end.
But that's not what they're saying here.
You know. Yeah. I mean, you have taken this to an extreme. But that's interesting, again, that we're seeing literally entire parts of towns and the Chinese restaurant industry because people associate this with China directly. And I get why, again, if you are in China or somebody who's recently come back from there. But as we've seen in the United States, we have a very different system in dealing with potential people that have potentially been exposed to this than you see in other countries. And we have done things like quarantine people. We had the planes, you know, that have shown up and we have people that are being treated in hospitals or under observation. We don't have a bunch of people from Wuhan, China, just wandering the streets down, you know, making your food at a Chinese restaurant. It's just not what happens.
But there are a lot of there's a lot of misinformation out there. There's a lot of panic out there. And the people, I think, are probably just taking the measure of, you know, better safe than sorry. But when we talk about bad information.
Yeah.
Did you hear this?
Which one?
The president said earlier this week that he really thinks that the coronavirus is just going to go away when things start to heat up.
The virus, they're working hard.
Yeah.
Looks like by April, you know, in theory, when it gets a little warmer, it miraculously goes away. I hope that's true.
It's not.
The coronavirus is going to go away as the weather gets warmer?
Well, you know, there are times...
Well, again, this is the guy that thinks windmills cause cancer, so we're going to take his medical advice with a grain of salt.
The coronavirus, they call it a novel virus in the sense that we've never seen it before.
Yeah.
And I think that like what the president has done, and he's not the only one, there are others out there, whether they're creating panic or whether in this case you're minimizing these critical risk factors, I think really makes it difficult for people out there who are trying to navigate this and just get good information.
Get it from him. That's a good start.
There is no vaccine. All right. They're working on one right now and they may have one by the summer, but that would be super fast if they do. We don't really know exactly how this is spreading or how long it takes an infected person to show symptoms. Some coronavirus infections, because there are like SARS is one, MERS is one.
Okay.
This is just another kind
of the latest version.
Some of them are seasonal. Some of them are. And so he's right in that sense. But this one is too soon to tell. And I think that, you know,
telling people it'll get better when the weather warms up is
an oversimplification of a very serious issue.
You're being kind. I would argue
I'm
that
being factual.
No, but my point is, I think it's just, again, more ignorance spewing and again, coming from the president, that is even more disappointing when you get factually incorrect information that, again, him and his supporters will claim is true despite all evidence to the contrary. So we're concerned that China might not be giving us the truth.
Yeah, absolutely.
We are concerned that Trump is telling you when the weather warms up, it'll go away. And people are avoiding Chinese restaurants for fear of contracting the coronavirus.
But think about that. If you feel like you're not getting the full picture from the Chinese government, they're not being as transparent. If, you know, we're sitting here telling you that what the president has just said doesn't really bear out in the science data right now.
Yeah,
it's no wonder that people have a hard time navigating this, going, well, who do I believe?
But, you know, we have said this over and over and over again, and I just don't think you can say it often enough, that while the coronavirus is a concern, and you're fine if it's a concern of yours, influenza, the flu here in the United States should be a concern 50,000 times more important to you, because that's roughly the number of people that are going to die of the flu this year, while coronavirus has killed exactly zero in the United States.
In the United States, yeah.
Focus on the things that are truly a threat to you.
And so, again, we're trying to give you that information. I know that myself included, at times, are really bad at judging risk, right? You think that the shark is going to bite you at the beach, when in all reality, it is the commuting to and from work that's more dangerous to you.
It's stepping on glass at the beach. It's going to hurt you.
Yeah.
It's not the shark.
Jellyfish. Have you ever gotten a jellyfish?
Thankfully, no.
Oh,
I've heard they're not
painful.
Good. That's no bueno.
That's
right?
No bueno.
But killer bees are real, right? Those are coming to get me.
They are real.
They still
coming?
They're
coming to get you, but...
All right, just double checking. I want to know what I need to be scared of today. Are you an Arizonan or an Arizonian?
The first.
Is one of them correct and the other ridiculous? By the way, the answer to that is yes.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But we have a linguist who's going to argue the difference.
Huh.
It's coming up next.
Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
From time to time, we genuinely struggle with, or I always, you know, we talk about what are people from a certain state or city called? What's the plural, right? Now, when we talk about Arizona, I've always operated under the belief that the plural is Arizonan.
Arizonan, yeah.
Arizonan, right?
Yeah.
That's foregone conclusion.
Yes.
Double stampies, no erases.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, that's not 100% settled law. That's not linguist law.
Well, okay, linguist law. Come on, potato, patata. Let's call the whole thing off here. There's actually a question. There's been a bit of a debate. There was a column that was written in Texas a little bit ago and referred to folks here in Arizona as Arizonians.
Arizonian.
When you say Arizonian,
it makes you sound like you're not from around these parts.
Makes it sound like an Amazonian. I don't know.
Okay.
It's just weird. So our TV partners over at ABC 15 were like, what the heck is going on here? They reached out to a linguist at ASU to find out who's right. We all say Arizonans.
We say Arizona.
Are we Arizonians? And really, the linguist says there's really no right or wrong.
What do you mean there's no right or wrong?
The first reference to people who live in Arizona was back in 1857.
What?
Out of Indiana. And they called us Arizonians.
Back in 1857, we were Arizonians.
About 10 years later, out of Mississippi, they referred to us as Arizonans. I don't think we should allow Indiana or Mississippi to determine who we are.
Do we get to choose?
That.
Okay,
yeah.
So we're gonna go with Arizonans, double stampies, no erases. We're moving on.
Done.
But there are a lot of other places that have confusing, if not obvious, plurals.
Well, we were having an issue yesterday, you know, talking about people who are voting today in the primary in New Hampshire.
Yeah, what are people from New Hampshire called?
New Hampshireites?
New Hampshireonians.
I don't know. That's why we have Super Producer Stevie Z in here.
So Super Producer Stevie Z has the list. And it's the list of the proper pluralization of states and or cities and towns,
is
right?
Is this where we really sound stupid? Because he's
going to
ask us these
things. Well,
we don't have
this. So he has it. And
this is official.
This is official.
And in
what
some
does it
cases,
say for Arizona?
For Arizona, yeah, it does give both Arizonan and Arizonian.
That's we're Arizonans.
There are a couple of states like that, by the way.
Really? We're multiple ones. Okay. Well, if you're going to ask questions, I ought to be able to get one of the two.
Here we go. I won't, but go ahead.
Let's do some of the more difficult ones.
Let's start with
New Hampshire, by the way.
New Hampshireites.
New Hampshireite. Also called a granite state.
I know it's the granite state.
Okay,
that's like their nickname.
It says it on their license plate.
Okay. So we got that one right.
Okay.
Connecticut.
Oh.
Connecticutites?
No, hold on.
I honestly
Oh my God.
Connecticut.
Connecticans.
No, that's a good one though. Connecticutter.
Connecticutter?
I swear that's what it's
no.
Yeah, I'm a Connecticutter.
They just threw an ER on there.
Connecticutter.
I did not know that.
All right. Got that wrong.
How about Arkansas?
Arkansans. Yeah, I'm going to go with that.
Correct. Okay. Arkansan. I mean, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but yeah, it's written like that. Yeah,
Arkansan.
All right. Next up, Illinois.
With the ones that end in S are the ones.
Eyes, yeah.
This one's actually kind of funny.
You're from Illinois.
Oh, no, I'm going to come.
Illini? I don't
know. Isn't that the school mascot? The Illini?
Yeah, the Illini. Yeah.
Oh, my God, I can't even pronounce it.
I know! There's too many I's in
Illinoisian.
Illinoisan.
Illinoisan.
Yeah. There's no I that you, you threw an extra I. There's like eight I's.
Okay, citywide. Where were you from growing up?
McLean.
So what do you call somebody from McLean? McLeanian?
McLeaners?
No. I've never heard anybody refer to it. McLean, Virginia. No, I never. McLeanians? McLeanians? But then I also grew up in Tucson. Tucsonan.
You're not Tucsonian?
No, it's Tucsonan.
Tucsonan. Okay. Oh.
Tucsonan.
What about Vermont?
What about Cranberry Townshipian?
What about Cranberry Townshipian?
Cranberry Townshipian!
No, let's go with like Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh.
You're a Pittsburgher.
You are not.
You're a Pittsburgher.
Pittsburgher.
Or a Yinzer, one of the other.
I would not have gotten Pittsburgher. I would have thought that's too much of a joke.
We speak Pittsburgh.
What else do we miss here?
Vermont.
Vermontonian.
Vermonter.
Darn it.
Okay, so on our open mic line, because Bruce and I, double stampies, no erases, believe it's Arizonan.
Arizonan.
Do you agree with us, or do you disagree?
Well, are you right, or are you wrong?
Well, are you the modern-day Arizonan, or are you the old-school Arizonian? Give us a call.
1850s.
On the open mic line, 602-200-2733. Your choices are Arizonan or Arizonian. 602-200-2733. Open mic line brought to you by Carol Royce.
I also want you to share if you grew up in a state or a city with an odd one that we don't know.
Like a Pittsburgher. Or Yenzer.
I came from Dallas, yeah. I don't know.
What is it?
Dallasonian?
We're all Texan.
Well, there you go.
What do you call people from Dallas? Texan.
602-200-2733. I did not know that about Illinois.
What is it again?
People from Illinois.
Illinoisan?
Illinoisan. Oh, my God. A former D-backs player is suing the Houston Astros. Why? Because they cheated. Does he have a case? We're talking about it next.